In November 2020, Oregon voters passed Measure 110 by a sizable majority, making personal drug possession a lower level violation and setting up a network of drug treatment programs around the state to create new addiction recovery centers. Since the law's rollout in 2021, the programs created by Measure 110, including its governing board, have faced a series of daunting problems and now face public and police calls for recriminalizing drug use. So, Mike, where would you start in diagnosing the ills of Measure 110 and the complaints of its critics?
Well, the critics are largely people who have been, who feel dispossessed. They were the people who owned the drug problem, who had profited greatly by it. The whole role of the police has taken a tremendous expansion over the last 50 years because of the drug wars. And this is a step against, or rather away from, letting the police deal with the drug problem. The way they're going about it is, well, in two or three ways. One way is just purely deceptive. They're arguing that there's an increase in deaths and overdoses and that crime, great increase in crime. These are simply not true, or they are easily explained. It's true, there are 20% more overdose deaths in Oregon from 2022 to 2021. Rather the reverse, but in the state of Washington, there were 28% increase. There have been increases in overdoses all over the country, and nowhere else do they have a decriminalization to blame.
Some of that is the convergence of availability of fentanyl, which is a highly addictive and potentially lethal drug, cheap out on the streets, the effects of the pandemic and homelessness around the housing crisis. So there's a convergence of forces that make this problem seem more amplified, maybe more visible, and the suffering also more visible. So I think some of it's not just the police, but how the public, particularly people who spend time downtown, but maybe people who just catch a glimpse of it with images online, that visible drug, heavy drug use and its impact as people's lives and bodies are falling apart are more on display than in times past.
Well, that's very true. And that's why these false arguments are gaining traction, because people go downtown and they see things they hadn't seen 5 years ago. But the truth is, the larger reasons that you are giving, those are the reasons why, and as well as it's immeasurable. It's the kind of problem like predicting the weather or the direction of interest rates. We simply don't know all the reasons why these things are happening. But we do know that they're happening everywhere, and that the passage of this law had nothing to do with that increase. And in fact, by the way, the fact that it means there are fewer people being released from prison, fewer people incarcerated in the first place, a release from prison is when you are 10 times more likely to die of an overdose. Fewer people are being released, and it's quite possible this law has kept the numbers down, why the state of Washington is almost half again as many drug overdoses. But you're right, there, the traction comes from visibility. And that's a problem, I think. It's caused by homelessness primarily, the fact that we simply don't have nearly enough residences in this state. People who would feel much better about using drugs behind closed doors are forced to do their drug things outdoors because they have no place to retreat to.
Of course, the suffering generated by the war on drugs and the history of criminalizing drug use is also not visible to people. And so I think the defenders of decriminalization initiatives here and elsewhere speak of how much suffering and trauma is generated through incarceration, and often people who are cited or charged with minor drug use or more or hard drug use then end up in prison, and their fates are profoundly affected, including often losing a chance of employment, losing often housing opportunities, families falling apart, losing the right to vote in many cases with felony cases. And you know, you don't see the surge of outrage about that kind of suffering, partly because I guess one of the functions of the criminal justice system in prisons is to keep these problems out of view of many people.
It's also, it remains structurally racist to the core. The whole war on drugs, studies have repeatedly shown that Black or brown people are from 2 to 4 times more likely to be arrested than white people who consume drugs at a roughly the same rate. And that structural racism is something that is relieved by the getting rid of the criminal justice element, because it's the whole criminal justice system is founded on that kind of racism.
Yeah, and I'd like to also talk some about the campaign around Measure 110 and the enthusiasm and hopes and ideals attached to it. Of course, was part of the mass mobilization of people around the murder of George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter movement, and these campaigns to curtail the police. And there's always, of course, hopes and promises of new laws that fail to fulfill, you know, the campaigns around them. And do you see this as similar to many of the progressive laws? You know, there's the climate clean energy fund that has struggled because often they're not supported by larger agencies in the state. Here, the legislature has directed the Oregon Health Authority to support the governing board in these programs step in more, because they've really been tasked with this enormous job of a network around the state and training people to take on work and with varying levels of training and background. And so there's sometimes I think a way in which these progressive laws that are passed are almost set up to fail or don't have enough grounding under them to succeed.
Well, partly that's the way Oregon works. Oregon has a libertarian streak, and it shows both for better and for worse, or in both sides of what's happening. That libertarian streak has supported the passage of the first decriminalization bill for hard drugs in the whole country.
Like we were one of the first to decriminalize marijuana. Yeah, so.
But at the same time, we are dead last in supporting treatment for people who are already addicted. And we are already skeptical of any, quote, bureaucracy that is set up in order to treat people. So there needs to be a kind of deep follow through here, and recognizing that addiction is a very deep-rooted problem. It's a fundamental problem that flows from inequities in our system and shortfalls in social, spiritual, material ways that we can't really predict all of, and they're going to be hard to work with. It's going to be difficult to treat all the people who need treatment successfully for a host of different reasons. But it can be done. It can be, the sharp blade can be blunted of addiction, and it takes patience and effort and intelligence. And I guess that boils down to fundamentally, who do you want to deal with this problem? Do you want police officers to deal with it? Or do you want doctors, nurses, social workers to deal with it? Do you want people who are aimed specifically, who are treated and trained for this type of treatment? Or do you want people whose whole experience is fundamentally based in dealing with lawbreaking of a more serious kind or a more direct kind, more violent kind, and to have them deal with people who are addicted.
Yeah, there's some of the commentary by defenders of Measure 110 who made similar arguments. The basic issue here is the impulse to punish people for drug use, and that the police are seen as a way of punishing people and talking about consequences. People have to have consequences, even though there's substantial social science and medical research that suggests that concludes that involuntary coercive treatment for drug addiction is not only not effective, but often exacerbates addiction. So providing supports for people to get treatment, but not coercively, is what the American Medical Association and other medical bodies agree with. But I think the impulse, the hostility toward people who are clearly falling apart and in public view stirs, I think, a kind of fear and anxiety in people that then gets translated into a kind of punitive response, enlisting the police to punish them, that makes them not responsive to the data on this that show overwhelmingly that a police response worsens the situation of drug addiction.
Oh, and it's spectacularly so in Oregon, where people also are not putting up the money to hire public defenders. There's Oregon, the payment here is notorious in the legal community for being a fraction of what it is in all our neighboring states. And they're simply not the public defenders. And one immediate consequence is that people sometimes arrested for very serious crimes have to be cut loose. There's simply not enough lawyers to represent people for large crimes, let alone for these, quote, small type possession crimes that we want to recriminalize. So that means people will be stuck in jail, stranded, and suffer all the consequences you describe without anyone effectively defending them and making the overall problems thus steadily worse.
In concluding, I wanted to talk a little bit about our DA, Mike Schmidt, who's progressive and has supported ballot measure 110, has also called in response to this backlash, and I think threats to his own survival in the next election cycle, has called for a partial, he doesn't call it recriminalizing, but it does sound like recriminalizing, going back to misdemeanor for public drug use, making it easier to charge drug dealing. What's your take on his response to this crisis and threat to Measure 110?
Well, you have to like Mike Schmidt because of his enemies. And the police officers spread lies about what crimes he will or won't actually prosecute. They attack him and they blame all the ills of recent crime and punishment on Mike Schmidt. But having said that, I think he's wrong. I think the efforts he's taking may be tactically wise as a politician. I'm really not qualified to say whether it's a smart move or not on his part, but I think any effort to recriminalize, to make this problem a law enforcement problem, it's been shown to have absolutely no effect and to make everything worse for decade after decade after decade. You know, we've been doing a war on drugs for 50 years, and the rate of deaths with overdoses is now 10 times higher than it was when we started this war. In every way, it's been a disaster. It needs to be removed from the whole criminal justice system in order for us to have a chance at actually solving or minimizing it.
And, you know, just a final note on that front. I think declaring a new law of this scope and ambition, facing the hurdles of the health crisis, the housing crisis, the pandemic, all at once, and then in a year or two, declaring it of no use is suspiciously premature. You know, in Portugal, they decriminalized drugs you know, 20 years ago, and it's now declared a victory, even by conservatives, apparently, in Portugal. And that's different circumstances there, of course. But these are, as you said, complex problems that require us building and expanding our social welfare system, addressing other inequities that make people vulnerable to these highly addictive drugs. But to abort this law at this point seems really driven by other conservative interests that, as you said, enlist a kind of libertarian impulse as well.
I think that's true, Janet. It's very well said. We need to give this time.
Okay, so we will also give it time. We'll keep coming back to it and hopefully hold Mike Schmidt's feet to the fire around this, because, you know, he obviously faces daunting challenges, but needs our support, but to have him hold to the principles that got him elected.